Our guest is a gentleman named Robert Fearon. Is it? I pronounce yes. I got your last name right?
That's right. My nickname is Skosh, and that's what most people call me, Robert, because there's so many Roberts in my family.
Skosh.
It means little one in Japanese, or Skoshi means little one in Japanese.
Okay, and don't you have a musical nickname also, or am I thinking of somebody else?
Well, let's see. Yeah, I have another nickname, Dogger.
Dogger?
Yeah.
Now, where would that come from?
Well, I had a... yeah, this dog was kind of... this guy gave him to me. He was a shepherd.
Uh-huh.
And I rehabbed him back to good health.
Oh.
And I ended up naming him this because all the people in Utica, wherever I played music, we played in this bar called the Roustabout.
Uh-huh.
And everybody called me Dogger down there.
So
because of this dog.
Because of one dog, you got nicknamed Dogger.
Yep.
Man has to be careful what he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, I guess so.
Have to be very careful. Well, now, let's see. You mind asking what age you are?
I'm 51 years old.
51. Were you born blind?
Yes, in the RLF epidemic in 1953.
Well, RLF, now, what does that stand for?
Retrolenteral fibroplasia, or retinopathy of prematurity. It's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly the same thing.
Yeah, and I was born in Tachikawa, Japan.
You were.
My mom was there. My mom went over to visit my dad, who was in the Korean War, in the Korean conflict, and she was pregnant with me, and I was born over there 2 months premature.
Yeah, they didn't want to call it a war. They kind of referred to it as a conflict, even though it was as much a war as anything we've ever been in.
Yes, it was like the Vietnam skirmish.
Yeah, it's like they don't want to refer to them as war. I think we're in war now. I think they're calling this one a war, aren't they?
Yes.
This war of the President Bushes.
Right.
Anyway, you were born in the early 50s, and you didn't stay in Japan long.
Came over to the United States in 1954, and my sister Zoanne was born in Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And... But my dad decided, because of me being born blind, that he needed to get back to New York State, and because he felt that the education for the blind was the best in New York State.
Well, he's probably right. It may not be the best, but it's a lot better here than it would have been over there.
Right.
Especially at that point in time, of course. But you have no memory of Japan. You don't remember.
No, I have no memory of Japan. And I did not automatically get into the New York State School for the Blind either. My dad had to go to the Albany, to the New York State Legislature and fight to get me in, because there were so many people going to the New York State School for the Blind, then they didn't have room for me.
And I thought it was automatic. If you lived in the state, they had to take you.
Right? No. They were going to hold off on me and not take me at 4.5 years of age and wait until I was 5.5 or 6 or something. And my dad said, "Well, how's it going to look if you see something in the paper saying free and appropriate education.
My son is veteran denied education.
Right.
I bet they let you in right after he said that.
They did.
Well, look, my dad already. Is he still alive?
Yes, he is.
Bless his heart. Tell him we said hi.
He's a hell of a guy.
He's
one of my favorite people.
That's good. And so they brought you back to the States, and they enrolled you in the New York State School for the Blind, which is called what? Is Batavia? This is not Batavia.
Yes, it is.
Okay, all right. I know a couple other people that have been there.
Yeah, in fact, the first person I ever heard on your show, Wally Gramza, who is a good friend of mine, was show number 12.
Yeah, is he a friend of yours?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I've never met him, but I'm an interesting fella and has managed to make a living tuning pianos all these years and knows them. I mean, front and back. Isn't afraid to take a pin block and fill it with plastic wood and re-drill it. I mean, you know.
Oh, yes, sir. He showed me how to take ivories off of keys in Everett Odie's tuning class.
Now, let's see, was he the instructor there at that time?
He wasn't. Wally wasn't the instructor. He was just he was older than I was.
Okay, so okay.
You know, Everett would say, Wally, you show Skosh what's what in here.
And so he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then you probably know. Do you know Tim Hindle? Do you know about Tim Hindle?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure, I've known Tim, and, yeah.
Tim is the second best-known blind man in the world, Jim Snowbarger being first.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Jim Snowbarger, but everybody knows Tim Hindle. And anytime you pick up Newsreel or Playback magazine, there's going to be something in there, some long dissertation by my buddy Tim Hindle.
Oh, his reviews on radios are something.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out something, a little feature he can do for me on this Blind Like Me show, and we're working on that. I'm going to come up with something. So they start teaching you Braille and all the things that they do to teach the blind kids. As you got along in school, you chose more, not the academic route. You chose to be a piano tuner and to learn those kinds of things, right?
No, I was originally wanting to finish up to go through the whole, you know, through my senior year of high school at Batavia.
Yeah.
And in my sophomore year, a friend of mine, his older brother died of spinal meningitis, so I had to go home to Oneida for a funeral. And I'll never forget this because I went to the Scott Heilman's older brother Eddie passed away, and I went home and went to the funeral, and after the funeral my dad said, "Hey, we need to talk about something," and I thought, "Oh boy, I'm in trouble or something."
What have I done now?
Yeah, and he said, No, I need to talk about something serious, and I know you want to hang out with your friends and stuff, but we need to go somewhere and talk about something." And I said, "Oh boy, I'm in trouble now."
Yeah.
So we got together, and my dad and I took me out. I think we went back to the house, and he said, "Now, your mother and I would like you to finish up high school at Oneida High School. And I know you don't want to do that, but we think if you finish up at Oneida High School, you'll have no problem in it, but this will help you get into Syracuse University."
And they were probably right.
You know, I think they were. When the School for the Blind was being a good thing, but I think going to public school forced me to learn how to negotiate with people and learned some different skills that I think I learned some good skills at New York State School for the Blind, but I think some skills my dad wanted me to learn were only those kind of skills I could learn going to public school.
Well, the best adjusted, we talk endlessly about this, and I'm sure you've heard us, and Tim fusses at me all the time, and my blind school experience was so bad, but the best mixture, best adjusted blind people have some blind friends and some sighted friends.
I think so.
Because it is a sighted world, and we have to, you know, we have to learn to adapt, not try to be sighted, but try to, try to not look, to look sighted, to be able to look at people when you talk, to make eye contact, to learn to wave. My wife taught me to wave. I didn't know how to wave at people. How the hell do you know? I never saw anybody wave.
Right.
So, you need to learn blind skills and sighted skills. And so you did, I think, the best thing.
And I think, I did not want to go to public school, but I said, okay, my dad said, look, he said, if you don't like it, you can always go back. I said, Dad, no. I said, if I'm doing this, I'm doing it all the way, because I felt like once I go to public school, I can't, if I go back to Batavia, that'll look like I failed.
Now, what age were you when this happened?
Oh, boy, I think I was 16 years old.
So you were about a sophomore or a junior or something?
I was going to be a junior.
Going to be a junior next year.
I was finishing my sophomore year.
So your junior and senior year were done at the public high school.
At Oneida High School. I was the first blind child at Oneida High School.
How did the other, were you fairly well accepted? Did the other kids help you in things or not?
Yeah, I don't know. Most of the time I was on my own, but at the same time I had friends, and I knew a couple kids from Oneida already, and I got to know more. And my sister, I had a sister 11 months younger than me. We were in the same grade, but she hung out with her friends, and I hung out with mine. And then we would walk to school, and once we got to school, we were on our own.
Robert would take his cane and head off in one direction, and sister would go the other way, right?
That's it.
Well, that's good. Just sounds like you had a good childhood.
Yes, I think so. I think overall it was pretty good. I have wonderful parents. My mother was my best advocate for making sure I had the materials and books that I needed to have in school. And it was a lot more reading, I think. There was a lot of reading at Batavia, but a lot more. I think probably the workload was double, I think.
You think at the public school, you think it was?
Yes, at the public school.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Of course, that ended your tutelage as a piano tuner.
Yes.
That took care of that, but you'd already gotten that down pretty good, hadn't you?
Well, I only had 1 year. I had one year, and that was it. Kind of started to get a little interested, but I wasn't that fired up about it, but I liked knowing, I liked it a little bit, but
it helps if you're going to be a musician to know a little bit about scales and how they're made and how you break those thirds over and how you run that temperament. It just seems to help. I don't know why, but it does. And when did your interest in music begin to manifest itself?
Well, let me see now. Well, I think I've always been interested in music since I was a little kid, and they had this big dormitory, the old kindergarten building, and they kept a radio on for us, and it was on WKBW, and back in those days, that station kind of played a little bit of everything back in the late 50s. It was, before Top 40, but it played a lot of different, you'd hear Percy Faith and Elvis Presley and all these different things on the same station.
Yeah,
and I was in Hamilton Hall and I heard Charlie Rich sing "Oh That Lonely Weekend."
Well,
I was going
home
for a weekend, and I thought, I want to play music as part of my way of doing things.
I want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I make it all right.
Yeah.
From Monday morning till
till Friday night.
But that lonely weekend.
Yeah.
She left me. I used to sing that song. It's a good song.
That's a great song.
Yeah, it goes to four, and then four kind of becomes one. Anyway, and so you decided you hadn't played anything up until then? Or
I'd played piano ever since I was about 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And I took lessons at Batavia, and I dropped piano because I hated reading Braille music. It was in my head, but I couldn't make heads or tails about Braille music. It
slowed
me right down.
I couldn't either. I couldn't. I think they told me I didn't have any talent, so I need to go do something else.
Right.
I ended up making a living playing music. What do they know? Anyway, I couldn't read Braille music either. I could barely read Braille. Surely you're a better Braille reader than I am.
Well, I like reading Braille. I like reading Braille a lot, but I was not a good Braille music reader.
Yeah.
I just did not. I'd rather play, like You Don't Try Too Hard by the Dave Clark Five or something, you know.
Sure.
I'd hear tunes and I'd try to work them out and get in trouble by Mr. Emmons for not practicing, you know, and I was working on, you know, learning different things, different rock and roll leads or something.
He wanted you playing scales and playing classical stuff.
Right, diminished sevenths or whatever they are.
Well, they're nice chords, and I'm glad I know them. And I,
yes, so am I.
I like to stick them in tunes every once in a while to have guys go, what the hell was that, you know?
Right.
So you began taking piano at an early age, but then you dropped out and just kind of went on your own, learned it on your...
on my own, and I took it again, and then I dropped it again, and then I just kept playing on my own whenever the spirit moved me, kind of. And it really paid off in high school because, girls liked it when they, you know, I'd play music in the after choir or something. They'd get around or sing or something. Or when I went to college at Syracuse University, I ran into other people who played music. This guy heard me play, and we went, I remember I was in the bathroom, and he came in, and this guy said, you were playing that Leon Russell type stuff. And I said, yeah, that was me. And this is John Kroyak from Main Endwell near Binghamton. And we just hit it off, and he played guitar. And we had, played a lot of music in college.
So you all formed your little band, and away you went.
No, well, we didn't form a band, but we did a lot of fun things when we have parties together. Just hung out, and we were in the same dormitory, so.
Yeah. All right, I tell you what, let's take a little break, and we'll talk about your college year, late high school years and college years. Robert Fearon is our guest. I'm Phil Park. Back with more Blind Like Me in just a minute.
Certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sight, here's Tim Cummings.
From time to time here on Blind Sights, we like to feature accessible shopping because we know a lot of people use the internet to buy things online. And many of the major stores have online presence as well that work very well. So I'm going to highlight one of those today, and that is, of course, Walmart. All of you have heard about Walmart. Some of you aren't in areas where you can easily get to a Walmart because a lot of times they don't locate them in areas that are near public transportation. But have no fear because now you can go to Walmart.com and buy whatever you want. You get, of course, Walmart's good prices. The site's very accessible, very easy to use. They have a very nice search feature. You can search for whatever you want, and you can search the entire store, or you can search particular departments like electronics or outdoor garden or whatever you want. It's a very nice site. It's very accessible. I would give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9, and the URL is www.walmart.com. For Blind Sights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
Robert Fearon is our guest. Do you know Dave Fearon that we have on our list?
No, I don't.
David is a boy from Pennsylvania. Yours is Fearon, though, isn't it?
Yes, and his F-A-R is.
Yeah.
Mine's F-E-A-R-O-N.
Okay, yeah, his is David Fearon. He's our moderator on our blind handyman list. Anyway, so high school was pretty good for you. You play in their marching band, in their band at all, or not?
I was in the choir.
Did you
sing? I was in the choir at Oneida High School, and I went to... I remember my sister had gone to Allstate, and she was ticked off that when I came to public school, I went to Allstate. Or they called it Allstate, was like county, really,
mm-hmm.
in Camden, New York, and she didn't go. But I felt kind of bad that I took it away from her, but at the same time, I was kind of happy to be able to do it. But she had a better voice than I did, but I don't know why Daryl Wonderly picked me, but I guess he liked how I could pick up parts real quick.
Yeah. Well, that's a talent you're born with.
Yes.
You don't figure that out after you. Or I've never seen anybody figure it out. You either find those harmony parts or you can't.
That's right. That's right. And so let's see. When I went to Syracuse for radio and television, I worked my way into a. You would have when you'd have to start at WAR working at night.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have all the engineering things down, but I was able to work in at a show called the All Night Talk Show.
Uh-huh.
Mark Leibowitz had the show, and I ended up getting it under a very kind of unfortunate thing. But he was a good fella, but he had some personal problems. And one day, he decided that jumping off a bridge in the Cascadilla Gorge in New York would solve these problems.
My heavens.
I remember a friend of mine, Andy Rebscher, who you ought to have on Blind Like Me. He and I, he's also blind, and he and I were at Syracuse University together. And he came over to the house that I was living in at the summertime that Andy lived during the year. I had Andy's room for the summertime, and...
Hmm.
And I remember Mark came over and said, "I don't know what we're going to have to eat. I don't know what to do." I said, "Mark, relax. We'll fix something up and we'll find some food and cook it up." So the blind butlers took care of Mark Leibowitz real well. We cooked him up chicken and corn and potatoes and.
Oh yeah, that's no problem.
That's right.
It's no big deal.
That's right. Sit down, relax, and we'll take good care of you.
Right.
You guys cook? And I said, "Well, hell yeah, we do.
We got to eat, don't we?
We got to eat. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but your major in college was radio television.
Yes, it was.
And not music.
No.
And you thought you wanted to be a disc jockey, or you wanted?
Yes, I did. I wanted to be. I wanted to be involved in radio, either doing either a disc jockey or doing sports or doing news or something on air. It was just felt like I had gotten a fever,
Radio fever.
And,
it's a hard disease to get over.
Yes, it is, I have not. I've done a couple remotes for stations where I was, the talent or something, but I've never been a full-time employee of a radio station, and I don't know if that's what God wants me to do, but I'd sure like to have another stab at it before I pass away. Hold on just a second. I got somebody at my door. Yes!
Somebody at your door. Well...
Thank you.
Well, is that...
Oh, boy.
So good, a friend of yours? Good.
Yeah, a woman that worked with us for years. She worked in the proof department here.
Yep.
Then she worked in the bookkeeping department. She had problems with her heart, and she passed away in Rochester at Strong Memorial Hospital. And
should we desist or can
no,
we?
No,
can
keep
we,
going.
Can we go on? All right.
Yes.
I'm gonna hit go and.
All right.
Just a little interruption from Peggy. Some kind of bad news, but we will continue here. So you got bitten by at an early age by that radio bug, and you haven't gotten over it, have you?
No, I haven't. I'd still like to be able to work at the local station here in Oneida, WMCR. And Bill Warren, he doesn't think blind people can do too much of anything, even though when he used to come visit me, he'd always pick my brain for advice or thoughts or something. But he'd say, I don't know, Scarish, what are you going to do if there's a fire? And I'd say, well, Bill, you get a fire extinguisher and put it out.
So, Bill, what are you going to do if there's a fire there, Jack? You know, what are you going to do?
That's
I'm going to do the same thing you're going to do. I'm blind, not stupid.
That's right.
I'll tell him to call me.
All right.
So he says that he doesn't think, you know, see, the one thing you have to watch in radio is a lot of guys don't want to hire anybody they think might be as talented or any more talented than them.
Right.
And so you have these program directors with big egos, and they won't hire you because they realize that if they do, you may have their job. And I always did. I ended up with their...
Well, he had a really interesting theory about employees that, you know, since he was always in ownership, that yeah. You need to have more than three full-time employees at the most, and have as many part-time employees as possible, there was a guy that worked for him for 18, 20 years, and that was about enough for him. After he just, the guy was tremendous, and he just let the guy, just let the guy go, regardless of what the situation was with this guy. And
oftentimes, owners don't understand why air talent is important. They don't understand why good announcers, good disc jockeys are important. And we're in such an automated situation now. Everybody's running them all with computers and voice tracking shows, and what does this guy play on his little local station there?
Well, you know, now he plays whatever, mostly the modern. It's not top 40, but it's just what they have in their library. It's mostly modern stuff, and there's some older things, but they kind of mix it up.
Has he got an FM, AM and FM both?
AM and FM, and still a monaural signal, He says, we got to get behind those hills, Scosh, behind the...
Still a mono signal.
Yeah.
Well, he's crazy.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Still operating in mono and figures nobody knows it. I bet he has a light on. I bet the pilot light's on. I bet the pilot carrier's showing. It's showing. Well, that's illegal. You can't do that. You need to file on him. This is the license renewal time. You need to file on him. You can't do that. If you turn the pilot on, you have to have information on it.
Right.
And so he doesn't. So we'll file a complaint and take that radio station away from him. That's what we'll do. Come up there. Well, radio can be hard on you. I love it with all my heart. I ate it, slept it, dreamed it. But you know what my most reoccurring dream is, and has been all my life, being in a control room and not being able to cue a record or not being able, the record's ending and I have nothing ready.
Oh, wow.
That dream, every disc jockey who's ever worked has that reoccurring dream. I had it last night. I was somewhere working at a radio station and the cart machine wouldn't work and the record was about to end. I didn't have nothing.
And you didn't have anything queued
I
up
had
or
nothing,
anything?
Nothing queued. I didn't know what I was going to do and I was just in a panic.
Ready to go.
Oh, man. That's just the reoccurring. But radio can be hard on you. It's very rewarding. I love it, but it can sure be mean to you.
Yeah, well, I almost worked at a station in Utica, and a guy said, well, we can't have more than, we know you're talented, but we've already got a blind guy here, and we can't have another one.
Did they already have a blind guy there?
Yeah, they did. And he was trying to help me get in because we both wanted to,
Yeah.
He knew I wanted to be in radio, so he was teaching me about the automation system and how it worked.
Yeah.
And I did an audition tape, and And I remember, I still get along with a guy. He works for WCNY now, trying to raise an underwriter position, I guess. But at the time, he worked at WOUR, WUTQ, and he said, "Well, we already have a blind guy. We can't hire another one." And that kind of hurt, but
it does.
He got through it.
We when I was managing a radio station here in town, we had two cripple guys,
wow,
both on crutches, and me. I was a manager, so we had our share of handicaps. They wanted to know when we renewed the license what we're doing, to diversify the employment in the county. And I just wrote him back and told him what we had, and I never heard another word from him. So you got into music. You played music most of your adult life, right?
Yes, I have. And we broke into the country music area here in central New York, and found, I never understood how that playing music, for some reason, people didn't consider you as handicapped when even though you were blind.
Yeah,
I never understood that, how that all of a sudden, you know, it was okay for me to play music and make a living that way, but.
Did you get your degree? Did you get a degree, a college degree, or not?
I did.
In radio and television.
In radio and television, and it took me a little longer because I don't know. I had incompletes, and rather than fail courses, I would, if I was doing badly in a course, I'd get an incomplete in it rather than fail it, so that I could over time get everything fixed up and get a passing grade in it.
Now, back during this time, the FCC required a third phone ticket there to operate a radio station. Did you ever pass that?
I passed that in my junior year. Went to Buffalo and took the test. And
what about
Elements 1, 2, and 9, I think it was.
Yeah, 1, 2, and 9, and you passed Element 9.
Yes.
That's great. So you got your third phone ticket.
Yes, I don't even know where it is now.
Yeah. And so how did you end up making a living most of your life? Just playing music?
Well, I want to thank my dad for a lot of this, because when I was in high school, and junior high, I guess, I got working papers. And that helped me so that I could go off campus and sell brooms.
Yeah?
And I think that's a really good work experience to do something like that. And
so you did some door to door broom sales.
I did some door to door brooms, and I remember my mother was wonderful. She knew a guy who had a feed store in Oneida, and that guy said, "Well, you know, I think I could sell some of these barn brooms. Why don't you have them bring home a dozen?" And all of a sudden, one Friday afternoon, Frank Finch said, "Hey, you're going. I'm giving you these barn brooms to go sell this week." And your mom called, and she's got a guy who wants to buy some of these brooms. And it catapulted me from the lowly ranks of being a rookie. All of a sudden, I was in the top 10. And I don't know. and Frank Finn said, "Hey, Bob, you're doing all right." You know, I could, you know. Of course, he benefited because he was part of the food chain. He got a certain amount of money from everything we sold.
Uh-huh.
He was our boss.
He drove the crew truck.
Yeah.
He drove the truck, and you weren't blind. You had some differently enabled people there.
We had partially sighted people we worked with that went to the school. And we went a blind person and a partially sighted lad would go together.
Okay, we'd walk to the door together.
Yeah, they would walk from door to door together.
Hi, I'm with Phil Parr with the Lighthouse for the Blind. I'd like to show you some cleaning products here, some merchandise.
That's it.
I'm not interested. Well, and a dog biting you, and dog snipping at your heels. And
right.
I did it.
And knock on the door. And, oh, please, come around to this door. If you come in here, you'll be in my bedroom.
Well, that never happened to me. I had always prayed that it would, but it didn't. So you did some door-to-door sales, and you had potholders and dish rags.
No, just brooms and whisk brooms.
Brooms and no mops?
No.
Well, I think I've told this story before, but I was at that time I was a cigarette smoker, and I was a heavy smoker, and I was walking up this long driveway, and I thought, I'll have a few puffs off a cigarette as I'm kind of sneaking up here. So I stopped and lit me a cigarette, and I set a mop on fire that I was carrying under my arm. So I just kept going up to the door. I thought I could put it out, and the lady opened the door, and there was a blind guy standing there with a flaming load of mops and brooms in his hands. You know, what the hell she thought, you know?
No.
I hated it. I hated every stinking, rotten minute of it. I hated it. Walking door to door.
Well, I'm glad I didn't do it too long because I, you know, but it was a good experience at the time. But the point was, the working papers enabled me to work for him.
Yeah.
In the summertime, where I ran the switchboard, or it ran me, I don't know which, but then I also wrapped coin. They had this machine where you shoved this little tube in this other metal tube, and you'd push the button and dimes would come down, and you'd, you know, twist the ends of the roll and put it over to the side and put it in one of these, they're like metal tank type deals that held the rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, my dad always felt that I ought to be able to work wherever I wanted to, and if he could help me, he would.
So
and
you,
he did.
You, but you weren't playing music at this time. You were selling brooms.
No, I was not.
And this was during your college years when you were trying to get your...
No, this was during high school.
Oh, this was during high school.
This was before I came to public school.
Oh, this was during high school time.
Yeah.
Oh, so they I guess that didn't hurt a high school kid to do that, did it?
No.
No. Okay, college, did you work? Did you play music in college when you were...
Yes, I did. Not right away, but I kind of worked. You know, worked into it. I got to know people and got to play music with people, and there was a place at Hendricks Chapel where we'd get together, besides the dorm, of course. Once a month we'd get together and play music on Friday nights. And then it got to be more than that because there were opportunities to play music. And I remember the first money I ever made playing music was, I think, at a mall. Jim Stevenson, who played dobro guitar, and I played piano, and there was a piano there somehow in the mall at Camillus Mall, and I made enough to buy spaghetti so I could cook spaghetti and have supper.
And but you were playing dobro and piano. You basically played some country stuff,
country,
didn't you?
Yep, that's right.
Country. Well, that's what I like. But
and Bob Dylan stuff like "Tangled Up in Blue" and.
Uh-huh. And so that was your first real music, your first music gig.
Yes.
But you've played in several bands and at several clubs and things all your life, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
And so you got out of college. You couldn't find a radio job. Looked and looked, just couldn't.
Yep. That's right. The small stations would say, you need to go to a bigger station. The bigger stations would say, you need to work at a smaller station.
Yeah.
And my dad said, look, I know that you're having a hard time in finding work. I know it's not what you want to do, but you can come back and work for me and work part-time at the Oneida Valley National Bank. And I said, well, you know, all right. And he said, it's part-time. I don't know when it's going to be full-time. It was full-time within a month. And then I got a job. I got laid off from there. And then I went for, let me tell the story first. I worked there for a month. And then I got a job working at Madison County.
Uh-huh.
And I worked there for a year and a half, and I came back, and it was hard to find work. And he said, you can come back and work for me. And I don't know when it'll be full-time, but within a month of that, I was working full-time, and I've never looked back. I've been here ever since, and that was 1981.
So you've been at this bank now for 24 years, haven't you?
Yes, and we went through a merger, and now our Alliance Bank...
Uh-huh.
Where the Oneida Valley National Bank and First National Bank of Cortland merged to become Alliance Bank.
Okay, what do you do for the bank?
I'm a collections agent. I will call up and say, afternoon, Mr. Parr, Scotia Fearon calling from Alliance Bank. I use my nickname because of my father and grandfather. Their little first names are Robert.
Uh-huh.
And I say, Scotia Fearon calling from Alliance Bank, just calling regarding the loan you've got with us and wondering when you're going to bring March payment in or if you're going to mail it.
Well, somebody has to do that, and you would be as good at it as anybody.
Yeah, I'd try.
And so now, of course, they're able to give you a list of people to call. They can do that on your computer.
Yes, it's in a report called a Prime Report,
mm-hmm.
and I do a couple different, commands to get into that report. And then at the end of the day, I do a couple more commands, and I email that report to my colleagues 65 miles away from me in Cortland. I never see them. I only talk to them when I absolutely have to.
But now do you collect for the other bank too, for both banks?
Oh yes, well, they're all our customers now. We're all Alliance Bank. So
Alliance Bank. So
yep.
And that's two banks that
merged.
And so you're their collections person.
I'm one of their one of six. I handle lateness from 18 to 23 days past due.
Oh, and they have five other people doing the same job you do.
Yes.
Now, these other five people can see.
Yes.
What a good job for a blind. I never thought of that, but it would be a wonderful job for a blind person.
Yes, I think so. And I mean, my wife is wonderful. She puts me in the right mood for it.
For collecting money?
Yeah.
Now look out. what do you mean? I don't understand that at all.
She's my best job coach. Sometimes I'm not into doing it. It's some of the people I work with. They just. But you still got to get along with them.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
My wife says, "Oh, just shut up, go in there, kill them with kindness. You can outwit them."
And now, is your wife sighted or blind?
She's sighted.
She's fully sighted, drives a car, right?
Yeah, I met her. This is an interesting story. I hitchhiked up to the St. Lawrence River. I did a lot of hitchhiking in my younger days. And her husband picked me up on the road. I was in a construction area on the side of Route 81 in Central Square. And I was going up to the St. Lawrence River, which is about another, almost 100 miles. And he picked me up, and we went up to the camp, and I met her. But I did not know till 20 years later that I would meet her again, and we would fall in love. By then, that time, her husband had died of congestive heart failure,
mm-hmm.
and that we would end up, falling in love and getting married.
So you met her 20 years before you actually married her.
And I did not see her till 20 years after that time.
And so you were single. You'd stayed single.
Yes.
And
I'd had girlfriends and so on, but never gotten married.
Now, your father, is he still employed by the bank or not?
He's retired. He's retired. He lives in Naples, Florida during the winter and spends his summers up at the St. Lawrence River.
It's amazing that these banks would need six collection agents.
Yeah.
They must have a lot of past due paper.
We do.
My.
We do. And, but we did such a nice job that they took us out for prime rib on Skinny Atlas Lake last summer.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you have a little office of your own where you sit and do this.
I have a little office of my own, and I'm the only collector in Oneida. The rest of the collections department is in Cortland, New York.
Well, there's no reason for you to be down there because you can email back and forth. Now, you say you do how many days late? 19 to 23? What did you
18
say?
To 18 to 23 days past due.
But there are people who do 30 and 40 3 months past due.
That's right.
Where those are the guys that will come and break your legs if you don't pay up, right?
Well, they won't break the legs, but they'll make sure the car gets repoed.
Yeah. And they'll if they will come and repo your car.
Oh yes.
You're onto something here. This is a good thing for blind people to do. And I don't know anybody else that's doing this. Any other blind person that's doing this?
Well, I think you can make this fun. You really can. The whole hunting a person down, I had to hunt down an attorney. She wasn't happy I called her at home, but I wanted to find out who was paying this, why this loan wasn't being paid, and the law office in Canastota wasn't handling it anymore, and
yeah.
They told me about this attorney in Cazenovia, which is just down the road a little farther to the southwest,
uh-huh.
but 15, 20 miles farther down the road, and I called her up, and I mean, all these devices, I mean, with my Braille note, I can put the phone numbers of people, things I need to keep, and I don't mm-hmm. have to have it on the regular report unless I want to give it to my other collectors and so on, and it really helps you to retrieve numbers if you need to.
Do you have a way of doing phone book searches with your computer?
No, other than doing directory assistance or asking what's on the system. What's a
yeah?
They have the phone numbers and I cannot do even with the great screen readers. I cannot go onto the mainframe of the bank computer, their big computer, the mainframe. I have to ask somebody for those numbers. If they aren't on my report, I call Cortland and say, have you got another number for this guy? And for a while there, I was calling, you know, when you work at a place, you develop relationships and friendships with people, and there were certain people I would go to, and the people in Cortland got all messed up that I already had a network of people I'd go to for.
So you're working at the bank, and you're playing music on Saturday night?
Yes, sir.
Well, life don't get much better than that, does it? Huh?
No, it doesn't. It's wonderful.
So you don't have children. Your children are
no, but I have grandchildren.
You have grandchildren because your wife had some
because
kids.
Because my wife had grandchildren, so oh. I became an instant grandpa.
So you get to enjoy grandchildren.
Oh,
and they...
I knew that I was a hit when Crystal Marie, my second oldest granddaughter, said to my wife, she said, I like this boy, Grandma. You can bring him home whenever you want to.
And so you and your wife go do vacations? I mean, you go out of town, so
yes,
take
we
trips?
Yes, we go up to the St. Lawrence River to my, I have a camp with my sisters up in Thousand Island Park. We go up there and watch the river go by. We like to just go out and hang out. And
fish? No?
I'm not much of a fisherman, but I love to be on the water anyway.
Yeah.
Whether I'm sitting down in the dock or whether I'm in a boat, I just like being on the river.
Well, you punched out a little more than an hour ago, so we're going to let you go home and have supper and say hi to your wife and get a good night's sleep and get ready for that gig tomorrow night. I wish I was there.
Okay. Well, when our CD comes out, I'll send you a copy.
When is that going to be?
The handpicked CD should be coming out in about a month.
Well, I was thinking if we could save this, then I would be glad to put a couple of tunes from your CD on the show.
Okay.
What can you get me a copy as soon as it comes out, or do you have a preview copy or anything?
I don't have a preview copy, but as soon as it comes out, I will make sure that you get one.
Why don't you do that, and I've got some other interviews we can run, and I'll just save this, and when it comes out, we'll put a couple of tunes by what's called a handpicked.
Handpicked. H-A-N-D-P-I-C-K-E-D.
Handpicked CD. And when it comes out, you ship me one first thing, and we'll put some tunes on.
All right.
All right, sir. Robert Fearon has been our guest from the bank in New York City. Go home and have supper, sir, and I'll talk to you.
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York.
Oneida, New York. A friend of mine, Jim Tobey, wrote a song called New York is Not a City, It's a Place Where You Should Go. They've got lakes and streams. More than just Albany and Buffalo, they've got lakes and rocks and creeks and streams, and the women there are pretty. Don't compare the apple to the core. New York is not a city.
Now, is that on your CD?
That's not a tune that he wrote.
Oh, that's a tune he wrote.
He was kind of like wrote tunes about regional things, about the blizzard of '66 and different happening things that happened in New York State history.
So something besides love songs.
That's right.
That's good. Listen, this fellow that you, this friend of yours that does radio, won't you get a hold of him and have him email me and let's do him on Blind Like Me sometime.
All right.
Well, that would be good, Frank. Have a good night. Or Robert, rather. Have a good night, and I'll talk with you in a day or two. hitting the high notes. Skosh Farin. Skosh Farin. Not David Farin, but Farin. Skosh Farin and hitting the high notes. And that's from their new CD called Handpicked. And let's do this stuff here was recorded in a bar somewhere. And he told me the name of the bar, but I cannot bring it up. But we'll play a little of the music from the bar. I think this is called, let's see. This is called Why I'm Walking. Old Fats Domino tune. Let's see. Stonewall Jackson tune. It's Ghost Fair.
Here's a song for the best friend, the best person I know, my wife. I got an angel on my mind. That's why I'm walking.
Farin from Oneida, New York, I think he says it. Got my angel on my mind, that's why I'm walking. Oh, Stonewall Jackson, too. Remember Stonewall Jackson had to Don't Be Angry With Me, Darling, several little hit songs. Anyway, that's our Blind Like Me show for this week. This next week we'll be broadcasting from the American Council of the Blind Convention in Houston, Texas, with a Cooking in the Dark show featuring, of course, the Cooking in the Dark man, Dale Campbell. That'll be next week. We'll be down in Houston and doing another live broadcast with Dale Campbell and who else will be there? Don Shaw should be there and Thomas Houston. And Don Pat's not going to make this trip. I think he got a better offer, which wasn't too hard to do. Anyway, we'll be next week from Houston. Then I think, I don't know if we're going to skip a week or two or not, but it's about time for summer vacation and the, we're not. So I guess we'll be back with a regular blind like me in 2 weeks. Anyway, next week from Houston, Texas, if you could come, we'd love to have you. We'll be, if you want information, you're going to be in the Houston area and you'd like to come and see us, well, give me a call, 936-634-9500, and I'll tell you about the hotel and where it is because I don't have that in my memory, but it's out by Hobby Airport, so it won't be that hard to find. I think it's a Sheraton Hotel. Anyway, in Houston next week, then back with more the week after that. Thanks much for listening. We'll see you next time on Another Blind Like Me. Bye-bye.